This is Health Matters, a podcast from Mayo Clinic where we discuss the latest medical advice, news, and research to help you live a happier and healthier life. My name is Kristen Meinzer. I'm a writer and journalist. And this episode, we're talking about how exposure to the news affects our brains and our health. Not that long ago, to get the news, we used to have to turn on the radio, pick up the newspaper, or tune into the nightly program at 6 p.m. But nowadays, news is accessible 24/7 through the internet, on our phones, via social media. Even when we're not actively seeking it out, it feels like the news comes to us. This episode, we're speaking with Dr. Adam S. Anderson. Dr. Anderson is a clinical psychologist with Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where he studies and treats a variety of mental health conditions, including depression and PTSD. Welcome, Dr. Anderson.
Thank you.
We are so glad to have you here today to help us with an issue that I think a lot of us face here. The fact is, we now live in a world where we're just inundated with news all of the time. And digital news in particular feels as though it's explicitly designed to capture and hold our attention by feeding a trigger reward system within our brains. Can you explain that process? How does it work, and why does it feel so good to be informed and engaged? Why do we keep eating it up?
I think we can think about for ourselves, why would we seek information and what captures our attention and what's really interesting to us and why would we go back? And I think there are a variety of different reasons. One, people can just have a habit of regularly going to and looking at certain kinds of information. Two, people can feel unnerved by the world that we live in and uncomfortable. We're kind of wired to seek information, and we often struggle with anxiety when we feel uncertainty about things. There's also just some natural human curiosity about the world. But there's a reason that most of us don't go to see movies or don't seek out shows that would just maybe be a camera showing people walking by. We go when there are big explosions. We go when there's excitement and, mm-hmm. and intensity. And so our curious minds are looking for certain things. And certain kinds of things can release dopamine-like response in our brain that generates some excitement that keeps us coming back.
But the fact is that in American media, it's not just exciting. It's oftentimes pretty negative, the news that we're getting, because that's what the news outlets have learned people will click on. People will go back again and again to those dangerous headlines, those scary disasters, this alarming crime statistic, this economic crash that's about to happen. On top of that, most negative news is specifically engineered to rile up our emotion. They're using alarming language. There's a story of escalation built in to the news article. So what is the effect of all this negativity and sensationalism on us?
News outlets, and particularly social media, they're geared toward showing things that the more attention they catch, the more advertising it brings. And so they're doing things that will catch people's attention. You want more people to view. And it does seem to be a feature of our brains that we're wired to look out for things that may be a threat to us. And so these things will catch our attention. There'll be things that concern us. But yeah, a part of what we know is that when we are exposed to negative things in the news, that this creates an emotional response for us. And the more that we engage in that, looking at news-related things, the more likely it may be that we get caught in potentially a negative cycle. So just an example of that, one of my favorite researchers who does work in this area is Dr. Allison Holman. one of her earlier studies looked at the response that people had after they were exposed to news about the bombing that occurred at the end of the Boston Marathon. And a part of what she found was alarming, that people who had not been there in person, had not lost family members, but had been exposed to 6 or more hours of looking at news after it, really demonstrated higher amounts of acute stress, even than many of the people who had been in the vicinity. And so this news exposure was dramatic, and the impact that it had on people. And when we're talking about acute stress, we're talking about anxious reactions. We're talking about really activating worry, sometimes people having nightmares. But one of the other things that's really interesting about our media is it puts very vivid images right in front of us of horrific things that are happening. And so this can really lead to really strong reactions. Heightened anxiety can lead to people feeling more depressed or hopeless. It can lead to feelings of anger about what's happening outside of us and around us in the world.
Social media definitely capitalizes on that. Even though the content we're looking at might be horrific, might be making us feel depressed or hopeless, it still somehow has us wanting more. So what's happening in our brains when we're drawn to or consuming this kind of news media?
When we encounter something that's novel or exciting or interesting, a part of what happens inside our brain is the release of dopamine. And dopamine is a hormone that's linked to pleasure and reward. It reinforces things. And often it can lead to kind of cycles for us of doing things. So often we think of dopamine as potentially linked with things like addiction. You know, it feels good to us. It's something that naturally activates pleasure and reward for us. So there is something about certain kinds of novel images, seeing certain kinds of things that activate these kinds of responses. And news media that creates images that are exciting or interesting to us can activate these responses. And these responses often might explain why we're drawn back, you know, to look again and again, potentially even at times where we know, hey, I've already looked enough. There are things that kind of invite us back to look at images and to see new things and to discover new things.
I think I'm not alone in saying I have doom scrolled late at night before, knowing this is not good for me. I don't need to consume one more story about this terrible, terrible thing. But it makes sense that I'm doing it if what's happening in my brain is that dopamine's telling me this is good, this is good. Keep getting more, get more.
And it may not be wonderful, but it's giving us something, and something that will keep us going, something that will draw us back. It's the kind of reaction that we think of it as associated with some addictions. You'll hear people talk some about how kind of addictive even social media types of things can be. And we think at least a part of that is connected with this dopamine response.
Is doom scrolling stress disorder a real thing, or is that just something that we say in slang and social vernacular?
So this isn't a disorder that would be diagnosed according to our diagnostic manuals or guidelines. It's been developed by people who have recognized that this is something that's affecting people. And so as they use this language, it makes intuitive sense to us. And it also, I think, can capture something that's meaningful. Yeah, these are terms that may lead to more formally diagnosed things in the future. But right now, they're really more of a heuristic, a helpful vernacular to help us understand some of what's happening for people.
Is it safer then to consume news materials through, let's say, a newspaper or through the radio? Is there a safer way to consume all of this?
So in at least one study, this was done by Huait and his colleagues, what they found is that when people had higher TV viewing, it seemed to have a different impact than when people were reading or something like that. So if I'm seeing a lot of these images on TV, that may be really different than if I'm reading it in a newspaper.
The visuals really can stick with us in a way that maybe words just aren't going to, or numbers aren't going to necessarily hit our emotional core in the same way. Now, when it comes to news media, does our mindset or preparedness matter at all? Let's say you're just on TikTok trying to watch some cooking content or some dance videos, and then all of a sudden you get fed a reel about some upsetting news. Is that sudden appearance of that news, because it's surprising, is that going to change the effect as opposed to, let's say, I'm deliberately tuning into that kind of news?
I think it can. Anything that's surprising to us, that's shocking to us, that comes out of the blue, that's unexpected, can create a different kind of emotion. Let's say that somebody has come to me and said, something's happened in the news and you really ought to come and look and see. Even in those split seconds or moments when I'm preparing myself, you know, something's happening inside of my mind that isn't happening when you get that surprise. So that surprise can trigger a potentially stronger emotional reaction at those times.
Now, let's throw COVID into the mix. We've got social isolation, misinformation, institutional distrust, in addition to all the other stuff we've talked about so far. How does all of this add up along with the 24-hour news cycle? What did you notice about your patients and what they were experiencing during that time with regard to news consumption?
One of the things that occurred during COVID, the APA partnered with the Harris Poll to conduct a survey. This was February 2022. And when they conducted that poll, a part of what they said is more than 7 in 10 people were overwhelmed by the number of crises facing the world. So during the time we were looking at inflation, we were coming out of COVID, there were supply chain issues, global uncertainty. There were very, I guess, strong differences of opinion where it did feel difficult to trust, really polarized differences in how should we respond to things. What more people said during that period is, first off, 87%, I mean, as most people said, that it seemed like we were facing a kind of stream of crises. And then others said that they were overwhelmed by the number of crises that were coming during that time. And so there can be a pattern of helplessness, hopelessness that develops in the context of that. There can be a pattern of greater frustration, of more kind of conflict that we feel. But often there was a pattern of greater issues with emotional distress. So a part of what we saw during that time, ordinarily somewhere around 18% of the public would meet criteria for some form of anxiety disorder or significant anxiety. But during that COVID period, we saw those numbers, particularly we were concerned about that occurring for adolescents and young adults. We saw those numbers going way up.
Is it that even though the news stresses so many of us out, we find ourselves tuning in again and again? Well, aside from wanting to stay informed, we're biologically wired to seek information and to feel anxiety and uncertainty when we don't know what's going on. We're also naturally curious creatures, and the excitement and intensity of the news we consume can release a dopamine-like response in our brain, triggering a feedback loop that keeps us coming back. American media in particular skews negative and often sensationalist, which can create strong emotional responses. And the more we're exposed to it, especially after an upsetting event, the more likely we are to experience high amounts of acute stress, like anxiety, worry, even nightmares. The medium we use to get our news can influence our reactions too. Graphic images from TV and social media can be more upsetting than simply reading a newspaper. And finally, if you feel like you've been more anxious in the past few years, know that you're not alone. During the first waves of COVID, there was a large spike in anxiety in the general population, and many of us are still struggling even now. Now, let's talk about how to assess if our relationship with the news is working for us or not. When it comes to the type of news or the way we're consuming it, how can we tell if it's affecting us negatively? Are there certain kinds of symptoms we should be looking out for?
I've tried to highlight at least three types of emotional patterns that seem to have been highlighted by different areas of research. So I think watching for, does this lead to increases in worry? Does it lead to me feeling a greater kind of emotional arousal or fear? Does this seem to lead to me feeling more distressed or hopeless about things or about the future or about where things are going? So I do think watching for that emotional reaction. And then I guess a part of what I would recommend is noticing how are we feeling as we're coming out of looking at news and really trying to name and identify those emotions. Potentially talking with other people about them, I think, can be a really helpful protective thing to do.
Now, you talked before about the reward system in our brain, the dopamine that might make us want to keep clicking on stories that are bad for us. But what else is happening there? Are there certain parts of our brain that lead to that fearfulness or that sense of hopelessness you mentioned?
Absolutely. So if we refer back to this study that was done following the Boston Marathon bombing, let's say I'm one of these people that looks at this for 6 hours. If a person's beginning to feel acute distress, this is linked with a hormone that we refer to as cortisol. And when cortisol comes, you know, anytime you have that kind of really tense, anxious reaction, cortisol may be a part of that picture. Also, when we're experiencing anxiety and when we're experiencing anger, if those are the emotional experiences that we're having, often this is just the release of adrenaline, noradrenaline, into our bloodstream. And this kind of response activates our sympathetic nervous system. It's the underlying kind of reaction that leads to heightened anxiety and panic. You know, there's been a lot written about how these emotional responses can be positive for us. If I'm experiencing a situation where something's happening and I have a fear response and it allows me to create action, that can be a really positive thing. Great book called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers discussed why having this response repeatedly over time and not having periods of kind of calming can really be difficult for our bodies, our stress system. And instead of having the strong reaction that we might have if we see a car coming at us and then calming down, oftentimes the continued engagement, we watch the news and then we watch more and we watch more, and it's constantly feeling the elevation of those stress hormones can have a really negative impact on us over time. So on one hand, it can just lead to anxiety reactions that become more extreme, harder to manage for us, or more depressive feelings for some people that it becomes harder to escape and that we become more kind of caught in or tied to. But our body is wired specifically so that it does well if we experience those reactions and then if we're able to calm down after versus maintaining the intensity. And as you pointed out earlier, we're constantly bombarded. So even before the pandemic, the research that I read said that the average American adult looked at a screen about 11 hours a day in varying forms in varying places. And that we're so constantly bombarded by these images and by information from different screens that it can be more difficult, depending on the choices we make, to have those settle down periods to experience the kind of calm that we need to experience as well.
Yeah, it can be very hard. We have screens everywhere at work, as pleasure. We even have them in our cars now. It's really hard to escape screens. Now, let's talk about people who are already facing challenges like anxiety and depression and other disorders. How does the 24-hour news cycle maybe exacerbate their symptoms or not serve them well?
Within the news, we notice there's a negativity bias. There does seem to be evidence that our minds pick up the negative more easily than they pick up the positive. If we're already experiencing depression, anxiety, certainly these can trigger emotions. You use the word exacerbate, which I think is a perfect word. They can make things worse. So this can be a part of a downward spiral that we're already in. There can be other kind of biases that we experience as well. So one of the things that we think about when we think about anxiety is something we refer to as catastrophic thinking, thinking, oh no, the worst is going to happen. And certainly the way that the news often comes with the extremes really drawing our attention, this can just kind of play along with and activate some of the things that we think people are already experiencing or that are keeping them there. If a person's feeling depression, often there can be a kind of hopelessness that they feel, and often seeing repeated messages of more negative things can just kind of amplify that. So there are so many ways that it can play into, be a part of, and help maintain patterns that end up being really challenging for people experiencing those things.
How do you advise a parent in limiting this impact on their kids? Is there a difference between how a child and an adult take in and process the news?
Absolutely. As you might expect, developmentally, children will have potentially less of a context for things, potentially stronger reactions to things, potentially not as well-developed coping or ways of framing maybe and understanding what's happening. I think particularly with children and adolescents, ensuring that there's conversation about things that are important, that there's discussion about things outside of looking at and scrolling. This can be difficult because we all carry our own, you know, news machines, and we don't always know what everybody else is looking at or what they're encountering. But it really does highlight the importance of conversation, the importance of adults, teacher, parental involvement, family involvement in helping to organize and make sense of what's happening and have ways of talking about it that can maybe moderate what otherwise might be just really strong, challenging, maybe more difficult reactions for people who might be developmentally younger and have a more difficult time with this material.
This also really helps make the case for limiting screen time for your kids and their exposure to distressing news.
Absolutely.
Now, for the folks out there who are real news junkies, we all know folks like that who just can't get enough of what's happening on Capitol Hill, for example. Is there a point where their constant engagement to the news might actually be more of an addiction rather than just like a hobby?
Sure. You know, when we think about addictions, we think about things that people have a hard time stopping. We think about things that are kind of consuming, that maybe bleed into or create problems in other areas of people's lives. And so for a person to be very involved, for a person to read and understand a lot about Supreme Court findings, and for people to read statutes and know more and more about what's happening on Capitol Hill, there's some things that are reasonable, that are great about that, that are laudable. So I think some of the things to look for are some of the things that we might look for with other forms of addiction. Is this something that I can set limits on, or that I can stop and go do other things? Am I able to maintain balance in my life? Is it something that's negatively impacting my relationships? Is it something that's creating difficulty? Is it something that's keeping me caught in patterns of emotion where I'm really struggling with the emotion? So I think those are at least some things that people can watch for.
To assess your relationship with the news, here are some questions you can ask yourself. After I engage with the news, do I feel worried, fearful, distressed, or hopeless about the future? If you're feeling acute distress, this might be linked with a hormone called cortisol, which regulates your body's stress response. Or if you're feeling anxiety and anger, this can be the effect of adrenaline, which can activate our fight or flight response. Now, when we have these kinds of responses to the news, we typically want a period of calm afterwards for our bodies and our stress systems to get back in balance. But if we continue to engage with the news and continue to elevate our stress without allowing for that period of calm, that can become damaging. It can make our anxiety even more extreme and our depressive feelings harder to escape. And if you're concerned your obsession with the news might even be an addiction, some things to ask yourself. Am I able to set limits on my news intake? Can I stop consuming the news and do other things? And is it something that's keeping me caught in patterns of emotion where I find myself struggling? So, what can we do to maintain a healthy relationship with the news moving forward? So, doctor, aside from not engaging in the news, which isn't really practical for a lot of us, what are healthier ways for us to consume it?
I think considering how much time with the news fits with our values, and then thinking about what's the way that we want to experience and encounter the news. You've talked about people who have hobbies associated with certain topics with the news. I think setting limits and thinking about how much involvement do we want to have with the news can be helpful. Going right along with that, I think thinking about where do we receive our news? There's been a lot of discussion in the news over the last, 5 years or so about issues associated with bias in the news. There have been a lot of discussions like we did earlier of some of the positives, but also some of the potential liabilities of social media. Often news, if we watch it on TV, gives us blurbs, or if we're encountering it in social media, it gives us small amounts, small bites of information. And so a part of what I think we can think about is, where are the places that I can go to receive news that feels reliable? Where are the places that I can go where I can encounter information maybe about what's happening in the world, but then if I want to look deeper, where I can learn more about and really come to understand the complexities of many of these issues, I think this can be helpful. So thinking about how do we get a chance to really look at our news carefully? And then I think being thoughtful about where does this news come from? Is this a source where this would have been fact-checked? Does this feel like news? I think it can also be important to remember there's credible journalism in the world and people working really hard to present us good information. News is part of a media system that's designed for entertainment and that's designed to make money. And these systems aren't designed to just shovel us the objective truth. And so I think knowing and being able to recognize some about the sources of where the information's coming from. I'd also recommend, this is a personal recommendation, and again, it's only based on certain areas of the research, but thinking about the amount of our news that comes from television or computer or kind of visual images versus also thinking about potentially reading news. Sometimes even, do I want to get news from friends, from family, from talking together about things and sharing information? And this might take practice because sometimes even among families or people close to us, we have differences of opinion, but really finding ways of discussing what we see in the news. This can be important because at times we might receive our news from different places and different sources. And often as we visit with each other, it can help us kind of sort through, maybe even find blind spots. One of the other things that I guess I would recommend is recognizing how you feel when you look at news. And I would recommend finding sources of positive news and finding places where you can see good things that are happening in the world around us, which there are heartwarming, there are touching, there are meaningful things that are happening that often in the negativity bias get the short shrift. And so not trying to advertise for anyone, but John Krasinski of The Office during COVID put some videos up that were called Some Good News.
I was an avid follower of that.
Yeah. And
he just celebrated the good things people were doing in the world at a time when it felt like maybe there wasn't a lot of good out there.
Just given the way that the system works, that our brains work, I think often we have to be proactive about this part, searching for the good news, recognizing around us the good things that are happening and ensuring that we recognize those, highlight those, and that we share those and discuss those kinds of things with each other.
Yeah.
Just one other thing that came to mind for me is there are different ways of being involved, and reading the news, watching the news, being aware of things that are going on in the world is one way of being involved. Going out into the world and participating in the things that we feel strongly about is another way of being involved in the world and of being informed. And so one of the things I think I would recommend is replacing at least some time that we would otherwise spend with media with engagement in things and activities that might relate to helping, volunteering, doing things. It might be being a part of a political party, or it might be being a part of a social movement in the community, but finding places where you can contribute and be a part of what's happening in the community, I also think can be really powerful and important.
That makes so much sense, because when you were speaking earlier about the adrenaline and cortisol response to danger, if we're out there in the real world, we can do things about that danger. We can volunteer. We can do other things so that that cortisol and that adrenaline is not just sitting inside us as we doom scroll to the next story and the next story and the next story. We can actually be active participants so that adrenaline and cortisol have somewhere to go, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that we're involved, so that we're doing things. Hey, and just one other note as well about, we brought up how dramatic this can be, how heavy involvement, especially in tough visual images. We've talked about people having acute stress responses. We've talked about people having depressive or greater anxious reactions. So I think if we're finding that we're having these kinds of responses, or that we're feeling stuck, maybe in feeling anxiety or depression or some of those things, seeking help, seeking mental health services, if it's become something that's just really become hard for us, or something that we feel caught in or stuck in, there is help out and around us and ways that we can come to feel better.
And doctor, in the interest of being part of the solution and sharing happy news, do you have a personal anecdote or a story of a patient you can share who is negatively affected by their news consumption and found a way to deal with it and improve their health?
You know, I've talked to a number of people in my practice, but also in my life, who have recognized the impact of the news cycle, who have seen increases in anxiety, who have seen increases in depression, and who have determined ways of taking action. Some of the strongest strategies that I've seen people use that have made the biggest difference. One particular person I'm thinking of, they were constantly looking at and scrolling and decided to completely stop for a period of time looking. And you can imagine the response of peers and people around them. Well, how are you going to be informed? How are you going to know what to do? And the person decided, well, I'm going to stay in conversation with people, create deliberate conversations that ask people about how they feel about things going on in the world. But it's different to receive and to talk about news through friends and loved ones than it is to encounter visual images, to encounter things on a page. Within a short period of time, that made a significant difference for this person, the real narrowing and limiting. I don't believe that the solution for everyone is to completely cut media or news out, but in this circumstance, it made a dramatic difference in a short period of time. And then it led to a person who was feeling better and who was able to then start to say, now I feel like I'm in a more balanced position to make decisions about how am I going to move forward with the news. Mm. Hey, can I say one more thing?
Yeah,
too?
Of course. So of course.
This is just reminding me of a book by Johann Hari that's called Stolen Focus, where he talked about going to a place where he really limited media other than trying to write. And he talked about the difference that just being away from media influences had on his ability to think and focus and read and engage with the world around him. And so regardless of how we decide to do that, and regardless of the degree or the amount that we decide to cut ourselves off from that, I do think that involvement in news and involvement in media and their potential impact on us is something worth looking at, considering, and then thinking about what we want to do with that in our lives.
Well, I love that hopeful note to end on. There are resources out there. There are ways that we can do better by ourselves, and there are books to read, and we don't have to live in a hopeless, miserable news cycle. We don't have to do it. So, Dr. Adam Anderson, thank you so much for sharing your hope and expertise. This has been great.
Thank you.
To solidify healthy news habits, one place to start is to assess your sources. Where are you getting your information? Are your sources credible and reliable? Do you have a source for more complex and nuanced coverage? Also, if you're finding that your current source isn't working for you anymore, maybe seeing the news through TV or social media is just too upsetting, is there a different way for you to get informed? Maybe getting your news through conversations with friends and family is more your style. Another way to stay informed is by getting involved. Find the things that you really care about and volunteer, or join a group that works on that same issue. It's a way of contributing and feeling hopeful by doing. For some of us, we may need more specialized help, especially if we're having acute stress responses to the news or exacerbated anxiety or depression. So remember, mental health services are here to help. Ultimately, don't forget to assess how you feel after engaging with the news, especially if you feel bogged down by negative bias in the coverage. And you can always proactively start looking for sources of positive news, too. With a little more awareness, you can start to shape your relationship with the news in a way that works for you. Okay, that's all for this episode. But if you've got a question or topic suggestion, you can leave us a voicemail at 507-538-6272. We might even feature your voice on the show. For more Health Matters episodes and resources, head to mayoclinic.org/healthmatters. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care and stay healthy. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as medical or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any medical questions. The appearance of any guest does not imply an endorsement of them, their employer, or any entity they represent. The views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Mayo Clinic. Reference to any product, service, or entity does not constitute an endorsement of or recommendation by Mayo Clinic.